This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Does He Love You? Does He Think of You? Of Music, News, and Criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
If we want to guard it, we're going to have to sow the seed. Plant a little happiness, let the roots run.
That was Crowded Table by The High Women. The High Women is a new NU with an umlaut supergroup. Features Brandi Carlile, Maren Morris, Amanda Shires, Natalie Hemby. They put out a record called The High Women not that long ago. It was widely loved.
You know what's coming after that.
Including by...
just building that straw man. Just construct him.
Including by Natalie Weiner.
Hi.
Natalie is here. I feel like it's been an interesting year for women in country, and I hate saying that because I feel like I say that every year, and part of the reason that we have to say it is because country music remains systematically shut off to excellent music by women. It's nonsensical at this point. I've actually been putting off doing this episode because I'm just like, surely I don't have to do this episode or like another thing like this again.
Yeah.
And yet...
I mean, I think it's like we don't have to call it like women in country episode. We can just say country music episode. Just the most interesting things happening in country happen to be about women.
I mean, basically accurate.
Yeah.
Basically accurate. So we're going to talk, Natalie and I are going to talk today about The High Women. We're going to talk about Miranda. And then later in the episode, we're going to talk about some younger performers who we think have a lot of promise and who I personally hope Nashville does not prematurely extinguish their flame. So, Nashville, if you're listening, don't do that.
Nashville does listen. I've gotten more feedback about country podcasts than basically anything I've ever written.
So. Great. So, for those of you listening, we will judge you harshly if you extinguish the careers of the people who we think should be thriving, right?
Yeah, definitely.
This is the bully pulpit, and we'll use it. Also, later on, Jada Watson is going to call in. Jada is an academic who has done a lot of number crunching on women on the Billboard Hot Country Song chart, on Country Airplay and Media Base Airplay charts, and is going to share us probably a lot of dispiriting news with terrible numbers attached to how terrible it is.
Basically, if you don't believe what we're saying about how there's no women in country or no space for women in country, she will provide evidence.
She got facts. She's come with big facts.
Yes.
Big fact energy.
This isn't conjecture.
No,
this is real.
Big fact energy. So before we jump into The High Women specifically, I want to acknowledge some people who maybe we're not going to talk that much about, but who are important in the current ecosystem, right?
Sure.
Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
One of the most consistent, like so consistent and so good.
Yeah.
Like I almost have run out of things to say about Carrie Underwood because she's so good in a very.
She is.
She's like, she doesn't vary it up too much, but she's very good doing what she does.
She's got her song Southbound now that's out now, and it's doing pretty well on the charts, you know. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good song. And also, she's pretty consistently been on board with this, like, women need to support other women concept, you know, from Tomato Gate onward, basically. I would say she's been a central voice in that.
Yes, and if you've listened to Popcast or read any of our writing, you know that Tomato Gate was when He Who Shall Not Be Named basically referred to women as the tomatoes in the country music salad, which is a, I don't
terrible
know.
Analogy.
Yeah, it's, you know, the less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
So Carrie, Casey Musgraves.
Casey Musgraves.
Who, you know, is sort of limning the edges of the genre.
Running the world.
Having a great time, taking photos at the place in L.A.
Winding up on Pitchfork Songs of the Decade list.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good for her.
She was the only country record representative.
Well, certainly because no other great country song came out this decade than whatever Casey Musgraves did.
Slow Burn was the one that made it.
I'm just saying. Apparently, no other good country songs came out this decade. I did describe Casey to someone who I had met who had recently discovered Casey. And I was like, you know, I like Casey, but I'm not totally sold. And I'm also frustrated because she seems to be someone who, you know, people from outside like to claim, you know, they, mm-hmm, like, I like country. Mm-hmm, I like Casey. It's that, right, you know, it's that right, dumb thing right, of people. Right. I admit it's a weakness.
Yes. You're petty. It's fine.
Jeez. Any listener of this podcast knows that that's accurate.
Yes.
And then this person said, oh, I am that person that you don't like because I just don't. Yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
anyway, shout out to Casey Musgraves.
Yeah.
First album is probably still the best. But anyway, it's a whole different thing. Another conversation. And I feel like we're going to touch on Maren in the context of High Women, but maybe not so much solo Maren. But Maren having a very big year.
Yeah.
Like
she's
a very, very big year.
Huge year.
And it's definitely a, speaking of slow burns, like not an immediate like spike huge year. Like it's been happening. It's been unfurling.
I don't know if I really have a lot of perspective when it comes to Maren because I just love her and
you're
I basically
it.
Loved
you're
her from day
tank.
One. I am.
Were you at the Bowery Ballroom show? Like on the first album?
Yeah.
It was one of the best R&B concerts of that year.
I mean, I just remember.
I've been waiting like 2 years to say that.
Okay,
come on.
There you go. Bravo.
Oh,
anyway, I remember getting the advance of her first album, like when I had just started at Billboard, and it was like, it was just like one of those gut punch moments where the songs were so good, and it was like, well, this is, I mean, I hope this is big because it's great. And
sure.
It was big and it paid off and I still listen to it all the time.
Yeah, there's some jams on that first record. But let's talk about the High Women. So you profiled the High Women for
I
us.
I did.
You spent some time. You went to Newport?
Newport, yes.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the conversation you had, what the impetus of the formation of the group was and sort of what was their energy as a unit?
Well, so I met them at Newport right after their first show as a group, which was really cool. You know, not first show performing their own material. Their debut was actually at Loretta Lynn's birthday concert.
Oh,
yeah,
damn.
They did. Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels.
Okay, I was going to say I was not invited to Loretta Lynn's birthday.
Yeah, I really wanted to go, but I was not present either. But they did that, and it's like, to me, that felt like such a special and intentional way to debut their project because it really is in line with their whole idea of a very, like, historically grounded and thoughtful way to position women as an integral part of country music history, you know? And so the concert had just been, like, spectacular. And honestly, I will tell you, because I know you are a High Women skeptic, I heard... Yeah, I know.
Wow. Way to tip my hand.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
It's
okay.
Fine.
That's all right.
And so
it's your show.
It's your show. It is. Yeah. I'm taking charge.
That's
okay.
Fine.
I'm the woman in the room, the women on the charts. We're all doing the same thing.
No problem.
So I went to the show and I was honestly slightly skeptical, even though the ingredients were all there for something that I would absolutely love because I am already a fan of like basically every woman in the room.
Sure.
And like, you know, it's my thing. It's country. It's women advocating for each other, blah, blah, blah. But the first single, Redesigning Women, hadn't really hit for me because I'm a little bit over country's like gender essentialist obsession
with
making songs about women are this way and men are that way and blah, blah, blah.
Like an 80s comedy routine.
Right. It's just like, it's a little much, and the song I was like, it's not quite hitting the mark for me in the way that I had hoped.
Yes.
So I went into the show, and I was like, I'm interested to see what this is like. And it was just like, phenomenal. You know, it was just like spectacularly beautiful music made by incredible artists singing songs that were so like sincere and deeply felt. And the audience loved it. People were on their feet the entire show. You know, so it was off the heels of that. We met up for brunch.
Yep.
And they all are very clearly like tight, good friends. Mm-hmm. Like the vibe is super relaxed, just like ladies chilling. They were hungover because they had been celebrating the show the night before. And
was it Amanda Shires or was
it was Amanda Shires.
It was Amanda Shires who
she had this very intentional, it was a specifically radio inspired moment because she was on tour listening to the radio. She's like, there's no women. I keep hearing all this conversation about how there's no women on the radio.
Right. And wasn't she like keeping track, mm-hmm. like in a notebook or something? Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. She was like taking notes on how many there were. And she was like, well.
That's, and I just want to say, I encourage everybody as you are driving in your car, maybe not if you're driving, maybe if you're a passenger.
Right.
I occasionally write while I'm driving, but I don't recommend it to everybody. But if you're a passenger, you know, be an active listener. When I think a lot about my earliest critical moments, mm-hmm. and it's
oh,
really,
wow.
No, but it's really like being in the car with my mom and like thinking about trying to be alive and engaged to what I'm being right. delivered over the radio. Yeah. That's where like any impulse I have to be a critic, I think comes from that. And I think you shouldn't lose that just because you're an adult and you're stuck in traffic.
No, for sure.
So anyway, shouts to Amanda Shires.
Yeah, no. And Amanda Shires, who, you know, successful in her own right, as mm-hmm. we all know, you know, as a kind of Americana artist, mm-hmm. you know, she plays the fiddle. She's
Americana's
a great singer.
Fake, but yeah, sure.
I agree, yeah. But whatever. If I don't say that, people will yell at me on the internet. So
those people are fake too. Just
it's true. It's true.
They can anyway. Yell and yell at me. If your instinct is to yell at Natalie, just yell at me.
Yeah. Well, that would be great.
That'd be great.
But yeah, so it was her idea, and she kind of started, like, brainstorming, and she came up with the whole High Women concept on mm-hmm. her own, a tribute to the Highwaymen, 80s supergroup, Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, and Kris Kristofferson. Mm-hmm. And so she hadn't even met any of the others mm-hmm. at this point. I think maybe she knew Natalie Hemby. But, yeah, she went up to Brandy the first time she met her, and she was like, I want to start this band with you. And so they were explaining to me this whole process and stuff.
And this is before Brandy was popping or while she was popping?
No, this is while she was popping.
Okay.
Yeah, this was like within the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. It was like not long after the Grammys happened, I think. And yeah, they were fully like everybody is famous,
yes.
basically, except Natalie Hemby, who is famous in Nashville songwriter world, if
yes.
not necessarily famous as an artist.
No, and yet. Although I, you know, we can get into this a little bit more deeply, but Natalie Hemby had a solo record last year, I believe. It's called Puxico.
It wasn't last year. It was 2016. I did a story about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Time is genuinely a flat circle. I have no idea. Anything that's happened in the last 5 years is a blur. Natalie Hemby's solo record, I think, is very good. I feel very strongly about a lot of the stuff on the first Marin record. Amanda Shires, to me, less so. And Brandy, those who listen to podcasts know I've had a ongoing
contentious
back and tug of war relationship with Brandy's music.
Yeah.
But everybody knows that I came around on the mm-hmm. Grammy performance. I don't know, that makes me lame, probably. But anyway, it's just a big fact. So I'm not here to run from facts. I'm just here to embrace them, even if they make
good.
Me look bad. The point being that all of these women are having great solo moments. Brandi Carlile, obviously, having a big moment right now in the last year or so.
Hello, John.
What?
Monica. It's your editor, Karen Gantz. Oh, hello, everybody in the podcast audience.
Wait, how did you do that?
I just entered the room.
But your thing doesn't even work on the door lock.
This is true. My pass does not open this door. However,
what are you doing here?
I am here now, and I wanted to tell you about how great the Brandi show was at MSG.
Well, I guess that's okay.
It's all right?
Yeah. Okay. How was the show?
It was fantastic.
Okay.
It was. That's it, everybody.
Thank you so much. Did you find her to be in good spirits and good voice?
Both. I thought she was incredibly charming. Obviously, you know, she told stories from the past, but not in a way to prove, you know, that she had. It was basically to show that the struggle had been worth it. And you got the sense that she had honed her craft mm-hmm. of speaking really fluently and directly to the audience over so many years in so many different kinds of situations that it sold out MSG, even though she was excited and you could tell,
yeah.
but it was really natural for her. And her voice is perfect.
Did she insult me from the stage?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, then
why would she insult you from the stage?
Well,
John was not open to her greatness until after the Grammy performance, which as it, you know, perhaps was designed to do, it changed people's minds.
Yeah.
It put her on a big stage.
Better than the album. Sorry.
She was a delightful performer live. Mavis Staples came out. They
I was
did
sad
a number
to miss
together.
It. I was sad to miss it. I will say that.
Only Marin was missing from the High Women.
Right.
They did some High Women stuff. The crowd was extremely appreciative.
For the record, you did try to get me to go.
I did.
Yes, I was unable to go.
You were on my list of people who should come.
What a privilege. Karen Gans, everybody.
All right, well,
thank
it's
you
a pleasure.
So much.
Thank you.
So there's no kind of like, I don't want to say ulterior motive is not the right word. There's no, this isn't something that they need.
In fact, it's like they were so conscientious about acknowledging like what a sacrifice it was, especially
great.
For Marin, you know, because Marin is a person who really, she's extremely successful on her own at this exact moment.
Yes.
And so they were like, yeah, we just can't believe that Marin took the time to do this project when she should be, you know, really promoting her own stuff and doing her own thing, because she's like on a skyrocketing like ship of her own amazing invention. And that was just kind of the tone of the whole conversation. It was very much like, we want to say, like, no, she did this. You know, she did that. Giving everybody credit for their contributions in this, like, really thoughtful way. But also really sort of being intentional about, like, what they wanted to say, you know?
With the songs themselves.
With the songs, yeah. With the music, with the band. They were like, they want to advocate for women, but they don't want it to be hokey. They don't want to feel, like, didactic.
And a thing that comes up a lot on this record are, or a number of the songs thematically are about rejections of what I would frame as the conventional comfort roles of women. There are songs that are sort of like, you know, not to be like the 80s comedy skits that we talked about a minute ago, but there are a lot of songs that's like, you may expect this, but it's not this.
Right.
And it can't be this, and it won't be this.
And I don't even think that that's necessarily, like, a new thing, but I think it was very important. Like, you know, there's plenty of songs like that throughout country music history.
Sure.
And I think...
Should we play one of those songs?
Sure. Which one are you thinking of?
My Name Can't Be Mama.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good song.
Yeah. All right, let's listen to My Name Can't Be Mama by The Highwaymen.
Things are getting better, but right now it's not looking great. My ceiling still is spinning from a night that went too late. I used to sleep this off and let this shame just melt away. Not for tiny feet and hallways calling out my name. Not that I don't love you, I wouldn't touch the hands of time. It's not that I don't long to feel your tiny hand in mine. I'm not a perfect woman, Lord, I don't wish it all away. My name can't be Mama.
So yeah, so with songs like that one, it's just very clear that they wanted to tell these songs about women's experiences.
Yeah.
There are songs that aren't specifically like women focused. I mean, Heaven is a Honky Tonk is, you know, pretty broad,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Loose Change, Old Soul, which is like my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. I just adore that song. But yeah, and so this is, goes into this whole balance that they're trying to strike, which I think they all kind of are still grappling with. Like, how exactly do we do this thing where we don't want to be defined by the fact that we're women, but at the same time, we want to be in this position where we're very intentionally advocating for women in country music.
There's also a same-sex love song on
here. Yeah.
That's called If She Ever Leaves Me.
Which which is great.
Beautiful record.
So good.
Oh, my God.
Written by Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires.
No way, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about Highwaymen in terms of what the metrics of success for a group like this are right now in this moment. Because these are not country radio records.
They're not. And I think it's like kind of an interesting...
By a choice, I assume. I mean, you spoke to them, so I'm curious about that.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it is necessarily by choice. They're releasing Redesigning Women to radio. I think it's going out next week.
Okay.
And so that's sort of the part to me that where I think this is going to be challenging, because these records are not necessarily like rootsy authentic enough to be like the on whatever other spectrum of like the Jason Isbell land, you know, but also they're not radio friendly enough to necessarily be guaranteed country radio hits.
See, that's the thing. They don't feel designed for country. I mean,
they don't. I mean,
and
I
country
think
radio is bad. Like,
right.
You know, it's like it's. I'm not saying
that's
that
not
as a negative.
Diss.
No,
yeah.
It's not a diss at all. It's just it seems that if you wanted to make songs that were designed to go on country radio, you wouldn't have made these songs.
But I think it exists in kind of this liminal space where it's like halfway there. But some of the people who are like, well, I like, you know, Brandi Carlile aren't necessarily going to pick up the Highwaymen and be into it because it's poppier than her stuff.
Sure,
you know?
That's fair.
And so if they don't make it at country radio, which seems plausible just because aesthetically they're so far out from like what's trendy, although the Chris Stapleton anomaly still exists, you know.
It sounds like something in the solar system.
I know.
It's like you know,
that
on
is
Star,
what it is,
on Star Trek, you'd be like, "Well, Captain, like we're going 4 parsecs or whatever," and it's like, "But be sure to go around the Chris Stapleton anomaly." Right?
So, like, if Chris Stapleton can make it, then why can't these records make it? Because I think they occupy a somewhat similar space.
But can we pivot slightly? But with that in mind, because this little micro conversation we have really reminds me of something I was thinking with these new Miranda Lambert songs.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's play It All Comes Out in the Wash, which is one of the recent Miranda Lambert singles. She's been rolling out a few.
To a crawfish bowl, stonewashed jeans while you're changing the oil. When you find yourself dating the bridesmaid's ex, you accidentally bring him to the wedding. What? If you pour yourself a Myrtle load of go, you dip your fries and you catch up on a bumpy road. You spill the beans to your mama's sister, got knocked up in a truck at the 7-Eleven.
Okay, so I love Miranda Lambert, have for a long time, just a spectacular performer, a tremendous person, like a great country music personality, like in terms of presence, free to disagree.
I'm waiting for the but.
No, there isn't a but.
Okay.
No. In terms of people who basically operate in the mainstream of country music, easily my favorite or one of my favorite in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I was pretty struck with these recent singles of the kind of internal tug of war that seems to be happening. So It All Comes Out in the Wash, which you just heard, to me, it's a little hokey.
Yeah.
Came out on the same day as a song called Locomotive.
Yeah.
To me, Locomotive, that's that raw, like that's that uncut.
Yeah, Locomotive is good. That was how she opened her concert.
Let's listen to a little Miranda Lambert, Locomotive. So I'm sure you can hear the difference between those two songs if you had not previously heard them. It reminded me a little bit of the old Hollywood thing of, you know, one for them, one for me. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, It All Comes Out in the Wash is like a decent chart record.
Yeah, it's
like
doing okay.
Yeah. But to me, like, it's basically like this for the heads. Locomotives for like the Miranda Lambert heads.
Yeah.
It All Comes Out in the Wash is a better version of like a Sarah Evans record, kind of. But it's still, like, to me, still kind of, and I love Sarah Evans, but, like, it's still, like, it's a little beneath Miranda to me.
And also, it's just, like, I also adore Miranda. Like, just the most, like, she is my hero in a lot of ways.
You just flew. Just tell the people.
I flew to New Orleans to go see her and Marin and the Pistolanis and Tenille Townes. And I'm wearing my Pistolanis shirt that I bought at the concert right now.
I low-key should have gone to that show.
You really should have.
Is it a tour?
It was just part of her tour. Miranda had different openers at different sections of the tours, which is why I had to go to New Orleans. And also, who doesn't want an excuse to go to New Orleans. But
this is going to be here Googling Miranda Lambert tour while you talk.
I mean, it's just like, I love her so much. And that song, it just feels like she made it for a Tide commercial, you know? And I just like, Look, well, tell me.
That's
I'm wrong.
Fine. No, it's exactly
perfectly
what it sounds
like. Licensable, yes. You know, which is fine, but it's not what I, and especially after The Weight of These Wings, which was kind of such a not radio record. And I was struck, honestly, at the show by the response that Vice got. Everyone was freaking out about Vice. They loved that song. Everybody had custom shirts with like Vice quotes on them.
Oh, it
was, yeah. No, it was like somebody had a shirt that said, "Gone before it even melts the ice." I was like, wow, okay, real heads are out here with their custom
Zazzle
shirts.
Zazzle gang.
No, but literally, that's what it was. Like, everyone and people, so these—
Everybody, like, heard that song and then ran to Michael's for craft supplies immediately.
You are so mean. Anyway.
How is that mean?
Don't patronize to Miranda Lambert fans and their custom t-shirts.
What makes you think I'm not patronizing to Michaels? Excuse you.
Anyway, but yeah, so it was not what I loved. I did like Mess With My Head a lot. Mm-hmm. That song I think is fun. That to me is Miranda doing country radio in like a fun, smart, like brash
And I feel
way.
Like I'm hearing I guess the reason I wanted to talk about Miranda specifically in this moment, even though the album is not out yet, is that I feel the tension is alive in her.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the last two Miranda records, I think you've seen opposite ends. You've had a record on the one hand that I think was like very esoteric and strange and had a lot of cool, interesting things happening. And then you had maybe like a less ambitious record. And it's interesting to see that she's still actively not sure where to land or where. And I wonder how much of that is external pressure. I want even someone at her level of success.
Yeah.
Is she being nudged into these Tide commercial songs?
Right. I mean, I sort of doubt that. She did just switch producers. Jay Joyce is producing this album, and she's been with the same guy whose name is escaping me at this exact moment.
Is it Liddell?
Yeah, Frank Liddell, Leon Womack's husband. And she switched to Jay Joyce, and he's kind of a much, like, buzzier country producer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to hear the entire album. I haven't yet. But The Weight of These Wings, it was just like, it was a pretty coherent artistic statement, you know, like for, and especially for a double album, you know, there was a really remarkable degree of consistency through that. And these singles, and especially the way she's just kind of like flooded them out, because there's a few more now. And yeah, all I want is the best for Miranda in the whole world.
And I also want her to I want her to be like the most popular radio artist
exactly.
in country.
Me too. And like, maybe that is what she wants. And maybe that is why she's making.
And that's the thing.
Sort
I think
of
in my old age, I went to the Uncut Gems premiere and I was thinking about.
Amazed to see where this is going.
I was thinking about Julia Fox, and Julia Fox, her first movie. She did a great job. And I was texting with someone. They're like, "Do you think she's going to be a big Hollywood starlet?" And I was like, "I hope she gets exactly what she wants."
Mm-hmm.
And what she wants may not, it may be that. And if she chooses to go down that road and she succeeds, no one should critique her for not being like more underground or whatever. And if she wants to remain niche and foregoes those opportunities, like that's fine too. I just hope that what we're seeing here is like an accurate reflection. That's all.
My sense is that obviously I haven't spoken to Miranda.
No.
I don't know.
None of us have. Maybe we will soon, but none
maybe,
of us have.
Hopefully. But like
Call
at
us.
The show, it really seemed like she was having a good time on stage, which was cool to see. You know, she was like super loose and like doing her thing, which is like very headbangy. Like Miranda does
That's
not
what I'm saying.
Like she's a rocker at heart and she loves to like, you know, shake her hair around and like, you know, just get down and dirty on stage, and it's amazing to watch. And she just has this voice that is transcendent. You know, she is so like self-evidently better than like 90% of the other people in the country
true.
As a singer. She is so strong. Mm-hmm. She does not miss notes. She just doesn't. Every single note is spot on and you hear it perfectly and her phrasing is perfect. Technically, she is incredible. Emotionally, she is incredible.
Should we? Now, Jade is going to call in now. So just to transition, let's listen to maybe what could be a Radio Energy record later, the Maren Morris collaboration with Miranda, Way Too Pretty for Prison.
Okay.
Let's listen to a little bit of that.
They don't have rhinestone ball and chains. Lunch trays don't come with Chardonnay. The bars there ain't got boys to buy a drink. We stick out like two bottle blondes. I must admit it don't sound fun for 15 girls to have to share one sink.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Okay, so you've heard Natalie and I for the last 20, 30 minutes bemoaning thing. Probably for 20, 30 years, if we're being honest.
My entire life.
Yeah, we're just bemoaning, just deeply bemoaning. And maybe you're thinking, but what do the numbers say? I don't know. If you listen to podcasts a lot, you're probably not. You're probably on the team. But maybe you need some data. Boy, do I have data for you. Jada Watson's calling in. Hey, Jada.
Hi.
Happy to have you and to have your data. Jada is an adjunct professor at the University of Ottawa and the principal investigator of the Song Data Project, songdata.ca, which is Canada.
Canada. Mm-hmm. She's Canadian.
Yes. So you'll be able to read all that we're talking about and more after you're done listening to us. So Jada, I had found your work and you have been doing ongoing research into the Billboard Country Song charts, gender representation, and breaking down on a data basis, basically why everything is so trash. So
yes, so, in short.
Yes, in short. I mean, so that basically you can give me the numbers on why they're so trash. No, I'm just playing. So talk to us a little bit about the impetus for your research and kind of like the top line findings that you've had over the last couple of years. And I know you have a couple of other papers that are due out soon.
Yeah, so I've been working on this for a few years now. It started for me, I guess, shortly after Tomatogate.
Yes. I don't even like salad. Like, why are we...
But
I'm sure you've talked about Tomatogate by now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So that sort of inspired me to start thinking about these problems. And I first started working with Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart, which then was sort of really changing, right? Because they had the methodological change of the chart in October 2012, and we saw pretty much the erasure of women from the top of the chart. And these songs that were staying at the top for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. So that's what got me into it, was really interest in what was going on with the new Hot Country Songs methodology. And then over the last couple of years, when I started to talk to people in Nashville about what was going on, I realized that if I really wanted to look into this, I needed some sense of airplay data, and Hot Country Songs doesn't give me that. So I was able to get a license to Mediabase's database, and so my last reports have all been working with Mediabase's published panel reports for U.S. and Canadian stations.
And that's the raw airplay numbers, spins, and for country especially, that's heavily, I mean, it's not that it's unimportant in other genres, but for country specifically, in terms of the star-making process, that is essential data. I mean, you know, I get those emails, and I'm always curious at what is being played in, you know, the mid-level. What are mid-level stations playing, and, you know, why is it a dude with a name like Cooper?
And so it's a whole range of issues, right? So who's playing what? How many times is it getting spun? And the next sort of studies that will come out is what time of day are they being spun?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of issues to consider. And so the report that you're probably talking about is the one that came out in April, had two data sets. And the first one looked at the year-end charts, the top 150 songs on the year-end reports published between 2000 and 2018. And then the other one looked at the weekly reports published between 2002 and 2018. And I was really lucky. I got to collaborate with Woman Nashville on this. I don't know if you follow them on Twitter, but they're doing incredible work advocating for women in the industry. But essentially, when looking at the year-end reports between 2000 and 2018, we saw that in the top 150 songs, women dropped from 33.3% of the representation in 2000 down to 11.3% in 2018. So we're talking about a 66% drop in 19 years.
Right, from an already frustrating and unimpressive number.
Exactly.
Something like last year, correct me if I'm wrong, I can't remember the details, but it was like it was the first time in the history of the year-end chart that there were no women in the top 10 last year or something like that. On Billboard.
Of the total year.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, it was crazy because it was the first time in the whole history of the chart that it had been that way.
Yeah, and yeah, last year with Billboard Airplay Report, it was right. 3 weeks of no women in the top 20. Wow. We did a short study on where we're at since that moment. So Woman Nashville and I teamed up for that one as well and looked at what's going on the Billboard Airplay chart. We're finding that in general, there's an average of 10 songs by women on those charts every week. And that's not even representative of the number of women who are active in the genre, right? So This is a significant problem.
What did you learn, if anything, about the sort of evolutions of the chart methodology for the Billboard chart? Because obviously, like you say, in 2012, they're adjusting it to take account of streams and digital representation. But also, that means maybe slightly less in country than it means in hip hop. Do you have any sense from your research if the country algorithm doesn't give digital presence kind of as much credibility or power as it does in other genres?
It does something really interesting in country. So what's fascinating with the Hot Country Songs chart is that prior to October 2012, it was an airplay-only chart.
Right.
And so then after that date, it was blending radio airplay across all formats in addition to streaming and sales. And so it's taking that Hot 100 chart method and putting it onto a genre. And what's interesting there is that it was made for an all-genre ecosystem. It really works well for Hot 100 because we're talking about artists from all different genres reaching an audience with a very wide and diverse palette. And when you apply that to a genre, it starts to skew the data in an interesting way. And what's fascinating to see is that a song no longer needed country format radio airplay to succeed. So a song like Florida Georgia Line's Cruise, which does have country radio airplay, but it reached the top of the chart and remained there for such a long period because it had airplay on all other charts.
And I think this is where the meant to be BB Rexha part of the conversation comes in, because here's, you know, people say, well, there's no women at the top of the country chart.
Right.
It's like, well, there's BB Rexha.
There is, yes.
And yes, which obviously shrug. But
not you, obviously shrug.
I'm a Rexar.
I'm a Rexar. Classic rockist, John Caramonica.
Sorry, I'm a Rexar. I don't know what y'all talking about. Like, I ride for BB Rexha. But it's notable to me that the woman who has had the longest run in the contemporary era at the top of the Billboard Hot Country Song chart
is not
someone who is Nashville born and raised,
right.
You know,
right.
Career-wise,
yeah.
And is also not the lead artist on the song. I mean, you talk about this in your kind of like data explications, Jada, but like, you know, for the purposes of your data, if it's a male artist featuring a female artist, it's tagged as male.
Yeah.
In these contexts,
well,
not obviously in the world.
And she, I tag as female because the song has been promoted as her, as the lead with them, as the feature, even though I think it's more of a equal collaboration. My concern there, I think, is the same concern that everyone has. There's no issue with the song. It's that she becomes a token female artist on a chart that has gender and racial inequalities.
Yeah, sure.
And so what happens then to the artists who are in the genre, who are working really hard to get space on radio? We shouldn't have a token female artist to begin with. And then what happens if that artist is not participating within the community of that genre?
In a perfect world, you would want a chart that allowed for people to come in through the non-traditional doors, like, and say, you know, and not necessarily in a way of the Florida Georgia Line and BB song, but maybe for an independent female country
like
singer.
Somebody to just rise from nowhere without right. a major label push that is required for radio success.
Exactly. You know? Right. And then you could have a chart theoretically that could capture that. So in a perfect world, that's how it would work. But it does not seem that that's actually what is happening. I feel like it happens in hip hop because I feel like the hip hop charts are like a lot more dynamic and, oh, this weird thing is all of a sudden the number three rap song in the country. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a SoundCloud record 3 months ago.
Yeah. The problem is that there are similar problems with Spotify and with streaming algorithms, right? So
yeah.
In a perfect world, you're right. That chart would be a gateway into wider exposure for an artist who might not get that radio airplay. Mm-hmm. But because the chart tabulates both country format and all other format under the airplay banner, and then also includes streaming, which has its own share of problems with gender representation. Mm-hmm. Even for an artist who is selling incredibly well, and I think of some of the women, Maren Morris, selling incredibly, the High Women. I mean, so many women have broken sales records in the last year. That's just one third of the pie.
Let me ask this question as we're sort of wrapping up a little bit. Were there any bright spots or causes for optimism in any way that came out of your research?
Bobby Bones is doing incredible work supporting women, and Sirius Radio, which I know is not terrestrial radio, is doing great things. We have a station here in Ottawa that has a program every evening called Girl Power Hour. And do I like the idea of having a special program just for women? No. But we do need to change the culture.
Yeah.
And I think that a program like this is taking those steps towards doing it. They already make sure that they program women throughout the day, and they don't shy away from back to back. So there's a higher representation of women in their program, but then they also have this program every evening for an hour where they play classics alongside up and coming artists. And I think that we actually need that right now. Grassroots efforts that are seeking to spotlight women in a really meaningful way to get audiences thinking about the problems, but also get them, I guess, familiar with female voices again.
In preparation for this week's episode, I was like, oh, I should see if there's a Women in Country Spotify playlist.
Oh, there is.
There is, but it also mixes old and it's like, but I mean, obviously, I'm all for historical antecedents and yada, 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 but there is certainly enough strong music being made by women today that you could theoretically have a playlist contemporary.
Yeah.
And I was blown away that the one playlist on Spotify wouldn't even give the women of 2019 their own
space. I mean,
space.
It just shouldn't exist. Abolish all the women of X genre playlists. They're all stupid. Sorry. that's my take. I hate them all. I don't know why they exist.
Well, that's a strong way to go out. Jada, to go out of your segment, what's a recent song by a female country singer that you think is great that we should listen to?
Oh, my gosh. That's so hard to choose.
It is a really hard question.
You know what? Right now, I can't choose. Sorry. I'm going to say anything by Maddie and Tay and Runaway June.
Okay.
Anything.
So
We Were Rich, Runaway June.
Okay. That sounds good. Let's hear a little bit of We Were Rich by Runaway June. Jada, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we were rich. We didn't have it all, but we all thought we did. And Mama always said that we were blessed, and I believed her. I never thought the grass was greener on the other side of our old chain link fence. Yeah, we were.
I believe in hope. That's not true, really. But you know what I do is I don't care what other people like. And I just like what I like. And I promote the things that I think are good.
Bold. You
I'm
heard
sorry.
It here first.
It's true, though. And it's just like we could sit here and be like, radio stations don't do this and labels don't do this. And I understand the systemic issues. And those are terrible. Perhaps the right response is to be like, foul with it. I'm going to tell you what all the good stuff is. You don't need a record label. You don't need a radio station or a Spotify algorithm. Just come here. We'll tell you what the good stuff is.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about some young singer-songwriters who I think are good. I know you have some that you like as well. So let's just do a little tag team action.
Okay. All right, go first.
All right. I'm into this Kaylee Shore record. You listened to it?
I did, on your recommendation.
What, and you liked it at all?
I do like it a lot. I think it's, yeah, a super, super strong project.
It's called Open Book. It's her first album, I think. Like, her first album? Oh, no. Spotify says there's a 7-song something-something last year.
Yeah.
Which has, like, a weird Christian album cover going on. Okay, so I'm not sure what's going on with that.
But I really liked, like, I think she has a very different sound, which is refreshing. Country radio does tend towards conformity and country in general, but also it's like a pretty coherent album, especially for somebody so young to come through with this like really smart, different kind of aesthetic.
There are a number of songs on this album that I really like, but I think the one I want to listen to is called F You Forever.
It's a good song.
It's very, very good. So let's listen to the first little verse and chorus of Kaylee Shore, F You Forever.
For everything, but you got me a random ring with your tax return. You played the victim with all our friends, then turned around and slept with them. But I know you closed your eyes and thought about me. Looks like my abandonment issues got the best of me again. Cause we should have never been together. Now I'm wearing your stupid ring on my pretty little middle finger.
So one of the things I like about this record is it does have some of the kind of the raw tension that I would associate with a Miranda, but it also has some of these very, very crisp pop songwriting instincts that feel very post-Taylor, post-Kelsey Ballerini
definitely
to me.
Definitely get a lot of Taylor, but also Taylor as put through like an Avril filter and also like a retro country filter. She has like all these like little mandolin and harmonica and like random sort of old country touch point aesthetic things that I really like.
So just bangers.
It's integrated in a really organic way that I think is dope.
Totally agree. This album's a knock to me. So very, very into it.
Yeah.
Tell me what you got.
Well, I just saw Tenille Townes at this concert with Miranda, and I was like really hoping that she would be good live. It was one of the reasons I wanted to go because I really like her singles. Somebody's Daughter is like, it's a great song and kind of, I would say, a little in the Ashley McBride vein of like kind of tackling something that's really outside the country music sphere, sort of. I mean, it's a song about homelessness.
Should we listen to that? Or do you want to listen to a different one?
I think that's probably the good one to listen to.
Somebody's Daughter, Tenille Townes.
Yeah. She has a pretty idiosyncratic voice that also sets her apart, I think, from country people. It's like very raspy and sort of, I don't know, just different. And her style is a little rockier, you know, rough around the edges for sure. But she's still getting, I think, maybe a little radio. I see her name on country, in the country world. So I feel like maybe she's getting a little bit of traction. But yeah, her songs are just super smart and thoughtful. And the sound is different enough that it's interesting. And also, she has a song called White Horse, which I feel like is bold, given the precedent there. But it's really good, and I like it. a lot. Yeah, I'm just excited to see what she does. And seeing her live, she was really, 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 really good. She sang super well.
I want to talk about Michaela Ann for a minute. Now, speaking of promising live performances, so when I used to review a lot of concerts, mm-hmm. I reviewed two concerts in barbecue restaurants in New York City. One was Sturgill Simpson.
Okay, light flex.
The other was Michaela Ann. And she had a record that came out, this is a few years ago, Ease My Mind. No frills, like very soft touch, good songwriting, crisp, clean voice. She has finally been upstreamed into the Nashville universe. She has a new record. It's called Desert Dove. It's a little more polished, maybe not to my taste in the way it's polished, but she still, the songs are really good and there's a lot of good structure. So let's listen to a little bit of If I Wanted Your Opinion.
I'm not a poster on the wall.
That's Michaela Ann,
mm-hmm.
who I believe fundamentally rocks a little bit harder than this most recent record, but just putting that out there for future reference. Speaking of rocking hard, I know where you're going.
Lainey Wilson. It's a name, you know, it's just sort of a person who I think is on Spotify's like new boots playlist, I want to say, or some playlist. I found her on a playlist. I know that's gauche to say, but it's true. shut up. Whatever. You know, somebody, Lainey Wilson's publicist, send me an email and then I'll find about it that way. But I didn't do that.
Wow. Lainey Wilson's publicist listening is big mad. Big mad. Not doing the job.
Anyway. So I'm going to use Lainey Wilson to shoehorn a tiny bit of Luke Combs into this podcast. Because I do really like what he's doing with the kind of like super party ready 90s vibe. And I feel like Lainey Wilson gives me that same energy that I really want more of. John is making this really scary face.
Do you
at me.
See me grinning?
Yeah. Okay. But Lainey Wilson is great. And like it has that same kind of like nostalgia, but with an edge, you know, like it's not super kitschy. It just feels like sincerely like she wanted to make a banger that would fit in at a county fair, which is kind of my like metric for
so
country music
to that
success.
Point, the title of her EP is called Redneck Hollywood.
Yes. And it's I know.
All right. So what song would you like to listen to? Is it the one where I just clicked on it and she talked about fixing a tire? That one?
No, I think the one that I want to listen to is Straight Up Sideways, because it's just a song about getting drunk, shocker, but it's well written and I like it a lot. It's just, she's got a good vibe.
Straight Up Sideways, Lainey Wilson, Who Can Fix a Tire. Okay, I want to pivot after Lainey Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Ingrid Andress is someone who I was paying attention to 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then but I wasn't certain that she would end up kind of in a country music context, because that's not necessarily exactly the direction it was going. And then somehow she got swallowed into that system. And I think with mixed results. But I was impressed. There's a song she put out not that long ago called More Hearts Than Mine that I was structurally really impressed with. It reminded me of a lot of those, you know, those great 90s and 2000s tripartite country structures.
No,
songs.
I did like the way that that was written a lot.
Yeah.
The aesthetic to me is very YouTube cover video,
yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and that I just have a fairly low tolerance for.
Mm-hmm.
But the song itself is really well
written. The song is well written. So I think that there's sparks here that I'm interested in. So let's listen to More Hearts Than Mine, Ingrid Andress.
I can't wait to show you where I grew up. Walk you around the foothills of my town. Probably feel like you've been there before. After hearing all the stories I've been telling you for 6 months now. We'll probably have to sleep in separate bedrooms. Pack a shirt for church because we'll go. I'm not trying to scare you off, but I just thought that we should talk a few things out before we hit the road. If I bring you home to mama, I guess I better warn ya. She falls in love a little faster than I do. And my dad will check your tires, pour your whiskey over ice, and take your fish.
So, John, how did you feel about the High Woman album? We know that I really loved it.
Oh, wow. I'm so grateful that my feelings are being taken into consideration here. I maybe admire it more than I like it. There are a number of songs I thought were moving, right? Like, we discussed If She Ever Leaves Me. I like Loose Change.
Yeah.
I think Loose Change is good. There was something a little, I don't know if heavy-handed is the right word, but something sober. And I tend not to respond well to music that reads. So, and I don't mean alcohol sober.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, just sort of the people.
I think that's not a bad word to describe it. To me, that's not a liability. I think it was sober. And I think they all just felt really deeply about, like, the process of making the album and that it was really special to them in a sincere way. That maybe there wasn't a lot of levity there. Right. But
this is a low-hanging fruit comparison. But, like, for example, the Pistol Annie stuff, to me, that works the best is the rowdiest, the least self-conscious, the kind of, like, most uproarious. And the stuff that works the least well in that context is the, like, we're somber and taking things seriously.
Yeah.
For me, it's, you know, especially with now, and especially in Pistol Annie's, where I think those performers naturally are, like, so
larger than life a little bit.
This is different. The raw material here is different. The kind of baseline stuff's different.
This is a point that I wanted to make, and I'm glad because I forgot. But during the Pistol Annie set at the show I was just at, the response was incredible. And it makes sense because Pistol Annie's performances are comparatively rare.
Mm.
People were freaking out over the Pistol Annie's, and they were particularly freaking out over Hell on Heels. They, like, loved that song. That was, like, and granted, that is, like, their banger. It's their thing. But it was such a, to me, you know, that's the idea of what we're aiming for, right? A moment where women in music are celebrated because the music is phenomenal and the performances are phenomenal, and it has nothing to do with, like, trying to correct an imbalance, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what the High Women want too, obviously. You know, it's just kind of like, and to me, the High Women album reads as, like, super sincere in a good way. You know, and Maren said specifically when we were all talking, she was like, she's really struggling with that push and pull. She was like, I want it to be honest but not earnest. That was the comparison that she
totally reasonable thing to want that I'm not sure it nails, but to be fair, that's how I felt about the Brandi Carlile record, and look where we are now. So anyway, don't ignore me on the last 5 minutes of opinions. Okay, I'm gonna pass you the ball for the closer.
Thank you. Sports analogy.
That's right. That's right. One of us knows a lot about sports. Not me. Final recommendation.
So I would say Maddie and Tay have been on a very interesting trajectory since they first came out.
Like a real EKG trajectory. Yeah. Like really just...
And it's a little sad because they were sort of the poster children for this initial, like, there aren't enough women in country.
True. Big facts.
Movement. Because, like, right around the time of Tomato Gate, they came out with this song called Girl in a Country Song.
A banger.
It's a great song, and it sort of... took these guys to task for these very cliched portrayals of women in all of their songs. You know, the girl with the cutoffs and the tan legs and the blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. You know, kind of the way that country music objectifies women, which it gets away with in a lot more, you know, it gets away with in a way that hip hop really doesn't.
The manic pixie Daisy Duke. Girl.
Exactly. Right. That's totally what it is. But anyway, so they kind of dropped off the map after that. Unfortunately, we haven't really heard.
It felt punitive.
It did. It did.
Did you think that? Because I definitely felt that at the time.
Well, they got pigeonholed in this sort of women country activist like thing that I am afraid will happen for the high women, that the music won't be taken in its own light, that it will be. And I think they're afraid of that, too, which is why they're really managing the narrative in such a. They're really trying to control the narrative in this careful way, where it's like it's about the music too. We love each other musically. We want to make music that's really special together, and that's one of the reasons we're collaborating. It's not just about sexism in country music, you know. And so Maddie and Tay sort of got like written off the map, you know, once they did this song, which was great, and they got a lot of PR for it at the time.
Yeah,
and now they're back with new singles finally this year, 4 years later.
Is that true? They released nothing in between then and now?
Not that I've, not much. Wow. Not of substance. I haven't found much. I mean, if you look at their Spotify, it's just a big gap. Some stuff might have been taken off, but now they have a trio of new singles. Bathroom Floor, I think, is the strongest. It's also kind of like the poppiest radio record, I would say. Even though Miranda has a song called Bathroom Sink, which makes it, again, I would say bold to do a song called Bathroom Floor, because Bathroom Sink is like one of my favorite country songs of all time. Mm. But it's just great, and they're really good together, and their songs are strong and thoughtful. And, you know, I just hope they get a real shot this time without getting kind of like the treatment around like this one idea of a song that they had that was good, but not like that's not all they can do.
No, and especially given that many country, male country performers are fundamentally just remaking the same song over and over again,
for sure.
Which is both bad on its own terms and also the subject of the song that you have now excommunicating
these great, like, promising artists. And also, like Jada mentioned, Runaway June have a few, you know, solid songs that they're floating right now. So this girl group movement is very much like it's happening. You know, there's a push.
So should we go out on Bathroom Floor?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. This is Bathroom Floor, Maddie and Tay. Protect Maddie and Tay.
Protect Maddie and Tay.
Girl, I know he done did a number on your soul. It sucks, it's sad. I wish I could, but I can't change that. But hey, good news, we've all been there a time or two. And one thing I've learned is it's gonna be hard, but trust me, girl, get up off the bathroom.
That is our show. Natalie Weiner, thank you for being here and dragging me as always. Thank you to Jada Watson for calling in. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. If you think that you are up on some female country singers that we are not, that we have not spoken about, I would love to hear about it. Podcast@nytimes.com. If you're going to yell at Natalie on Twitter, yell at me instead. And subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio content, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Our producers this week in the booth, Daniel Powell, at home, Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Let's wipe the tears.